everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. And to those of you listening who are on the march at the United Nations, my heart is with you. I wish I could be as well. Hey, people are reasonable, you know. They're very reasonable people. Most people function on a fairly sane level most of the time. Yet, when I see them as couples, or when I hear about what they do with each other, they often act very crazy with each other. Yes, there are things that couples do with each other that you would just never imagine. Levels of arguments, levels of contempt, levels of criticism, levels of freezing the other person out. Things that you may do nowhere else in your life. You do when you're in love. Doesn't that make you look forward to something? Imagine if a child said to you, hey, what is love? Well, love is when you start screaming at each other and you're contemptuous and you criticize each other and you ignore each other. That's love. No, it's not what we would imagine it is. It's not our imagination, but it's what people do. Is it true that familiarity breeds contempt? Is it true? Why are some people so negative with their mates? A negativity that never manifests on the outside with other people, or rarely manifests with other people. Is it that we parade our demons to intimidate our partners? You know, part of the reason of becoming crazy in front of your mate, maybe it's just to let them know that you're strong and you could fight. You know, so maybe somebody who's not unreasonable at other times becomes unreasonable with their mates. Just to let you know, mister, that, you know, I'm a handful. I'm no pushover. And it's a power struggle that two people who live together do. So they become unreasonable with each other. I'll scare you off with my most dysfunctional self. And sometimes you present yourself to your partner as being wacky. You know, you just bring in your ugliest self. Why would you do that? Why with your mate? You know? So some people would use rage, sarcasm, criticism, contempt, or even stonewalling, which is freezing the other person out, and just completely ignore or deal with their partners through the worst possible means. Or they can become absolutely defensive whenever their mate brings anything to them. So these things that people do, defensiveness, sarcasm, rage, criticism, contempt, these are things that people do. And I want to understand why, and I'm sure you want to understand why too, so that's what we're going to go over today. Today we're going to talk about this relationship phenomena called killing each other. You know, and it's kind of, if you look at it, you think it's funny. I knew two children who used to play Bert and Judy, they used to call it. And the game was, when the parents went out, they would jump in their parents' beds. This is a brother and sister. And they would play their parents, and they would scream at each other and fight with each other. And it was their game. And it was what they would do. They would get, you stupid, darling, and you stupid, silly. And they would just scream at each other. And it was their game. It was called Bert and Judy. What a thing to do. What an impression on the kids' minds. Maybe they saw it as a power struggle. Maybe they said, this is a game where we'll play power. And whoever screams the most wins. Or maybe, you know, maybe those of you who live alone are the only sane ones. Maybe that's true. Maybe partnership is just too tough, too demanding. You know, you're told when you're born, life is one-third work, one-third play, and one-third sleep. But when you get married or you live with somebody, it's one-third work, one-third sleep, and one-third discussions. No, one-third's trying to figure it out, figure out what's wrong. Yet, the National Sleep Foundation says that 61% of all Americans share their bed with significant others. So there seems to be a preference to being with somebody, but it must become very difficult. Well, I know it's difficult. According to Dr. John Gottman, author of The Art and Science of Love, he says that 80% of all discussions are initiated by the woman in a relationship. 80%. Now, if 80% are initiated by the woman in a relationship, discussions about problems, what does that mean? What is it telling us? Is it telling us that husbands just don't want to talk about things? If 80% are brought up, you know, would they just rather let it slide? Then they say that these discussions account for 90% of all arguments. So now we have the wife bringing up problems to the husband that wind up in 90% of the arguments, and if nobody ever brought up anything, there probably would be very few arguments. And it would be very silent. Well, maybe that's the way it should be. Is that the way it should be? Do you think you would like to have a nice, peaceful house where nobody brings up their arguments? You know, maybe the idea in life is you get so old that you eventually have therapists, and you call up your psychotherapist every time you feel any kind of disharmony with your mate, and the therapists talk to each other, and then you talk to the therapists, and they argue through the therapist or something, or you go to family therapy, but you keep a peaceful house. No, that can't be the idea. Okay, they studied successful couples. Now, successful couples who were truly happy with each other, who really got along well, they had arguments. The couples who didn't have any arguments, they studied this, and the couples who didn't have arguments, they found couples who never had an argument, when individually reporting on how they felt about their relationship, they were mostly unhappy. You see, if there were no arguments in the house, there was something unfulfilling about the relationship. When there was no arguments in the house, there usually was not a sexual relationship present. When there were no arguments in the house, things were nice, but not dynamic, not intense, not fiery, not passionate. And so the people were somewhat separate from each other. So it isn't that arguments are a bad sign, or disagreements are a bad sign. It's that ugly disagreements are bad signs. Those really horrendous things that people get into, that's a bad sign. Now, going back to the successful relationships, when successful relationships disagreed, get this, there would be 5 positive comments for every negative comment, for every zinger, you know, that you would throw in there. So you would say, you know, I want to let you know that I really appreciate everything you're doing around the house, and the house has been looking beautiful lately, and I love the fact that you made us dinner tonight, but I'm having a problem with one particular aspect, and it's that you threw the dinner in my lap. Whatever it is that you're saying, it's 1 out of 5. There are 4 good things or 5 good things to every 1 bad thing that's said. So what you do is you support your partner. You tell your partner the positives about the relationship before you present the negative. And the negative you want to deal with keeps the positive in mind. Very good idea. If your idea is to have a successful relationship, we're going to go into maybe the intention is to have a not successful relationship. Maybe people are going around thinking they don't want peace in the family. You know, they don't want to have peace. They want it to be dynamic for a reason. They want it to be a war path. They want it to be a fighting ring. You know, like people want to watch television and see battles and see boxing matches and see football games. They want to come home and they want to have a competition. They want to have somebody they could sink their teeth into in an argument. Maybe that's true. You always the fighting kind? If you've always been the fighting kind, this may be you. It may be that you need a fight rather than not have a fight. Well, let's continue with the study. Of the non-successful relationships, meaning the relationships that were just downright ugly, that looked like they were on the verge of divorce every minute, and even if they weren't on the verge of divorce, they were certainly on the verge of destructiveness. You could see there was alcohol present, or usually drugs present, or evasiveness present, or affairs present. There's just something that's saying this isn't working. In those discussions, there were, get this, 20 negatives to every single positive. It kind of proves the point. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. It's not as bad as you think. I mean, there's good stuff here. What does it mean that things get so bad when you have a discussion? What do they think? What does it mean? Dr. Richard Kreidman once said, all relationships have only one of two purposes. Either they are constructive, or all discussions are either destructive or constructive. He said it's kind of simple. When somebody wants to talk to you, you think to yourself, this is either constructive or destructive. Constructive is they want to talk to you, and they want to work something out, and they want things to be better between the two of you. Destructive is, I don't really want to work anything out. I don't want to pound on your head. I want to make you feel bad, and I'm coming after you because I'm in a rotten mood. Now, how could you tell the difference between a constructive relationship and a destructive relationship? Well, there's the 20-minute test. See, both could seem seemingly innocent. John, I'd like to talk to you about the leaves in the driveway. See, they're seemingly, okay, honey, let's talk about the leaves in the driveway. You remember you said you were going to rake those leaves when you came home yesterday? Yes, I remember I said that, but I'm sorry I was late for work and I forgot to do it when I came home. Well, you know, you always forget. See, now we begin seeing that the seemingly innocent argument is becoming something a little more. And John says, uh-oh, always forget? And in fact, not only did you forget that, but you last week, and then they continue the argument, and then it boils, and you get hit with a dozen different things all at once. And what seemed like it was just going to be a discussion about the leaves in the driveway becomes this incredible barrage of criticism. How can you tell? Well, you can tell when you feel yourself getting defensive, when you see that you're no longer there, when you see that you're just trying to ward off every piece of evidence with counter-evidence. You know, well, you said you were going to, well, now I didn't do it. I didn't say it exactly I was going to do it at that time. And you understand, and you just become defensive. Defensiveness is a sure sign that you feel like you're being attacked. Why else would you be defensive? So one of the things that you do, and that's one good test, is to see how you're feeling in the discussion. Because in a loving discussion, my friends, people feel good. Yes, even if you don't like what's being discussed, you feel good. Your honey is bringing you some information because they want to love you better. That's the idea. They're coming to you to talk to you about something because they want to love you better. They want to not have anything between you. With that recognition in mind, you should be celebrating every discussion. But some discussions are just meant, as Dr. Kreidman said, they're either constructive or destructive. And the destructive ones, you know how else you can tell? 22-minute test. The 22-minute test is a great test. 22 minutes after the discussion began, if it has gotten worse, then it's not a constructive relationship. Because in 22 minutes, you should have gotten a little better. You should have at least heard each other. You should have at least understood each other a little bit. And you should be getting the point. You know, I want to talk to you about raking the leaves. What is it that upsets you about raking the leaves? Well, when you make promises to me about raking the leaves and you don't rake the leaves. Oh, gee, you know, I didn't think about it, honey. You know, I didn't think about what it meant to you. I'm sorry for being thoughtless about that. I should have raked those leaves. Well, I'm glad. Would you tell me when you're going to rake the leaves? Well, I'll rake those leaves tonight. I'll get up right now and do it for you. You don't have to do it now, but I would do it for you. Okay, I'll do it in the morning. 1 minute discussion. Wasn't that nice? Whoever rakes leaves, anyway. either have constructive relationships, constructive arguments or destructive arguments, and you know it. You could tell. You could tell these discussions right from the beginning. You know when you don't feel good. Now, also, according to Dr. Gottman's statistics, even though the wives brought up so many complaints more than the husband, which they did, 80% of the complaints, get this. During a discussion or argument, it was the husbands who got the most bent out of shape. The husbands get the most upset. They get so upset. 94% of the time, it is the husband who gets really upset, not the wife who's bringing up the issue. Well, that's a very interesting thing. Why would that happen? You see, the husbands are trying to avoid the thing in the first place. So if they get nailed down, and then they get to the point where they have to confront the issue, something happens to them. They get explosive. And not only do they get explosive, but they find it hard to calm down. So is it that your heart rate just goes up so much faster when you're a man than when you're a woman, and then when it goes up that much faster and it starts going, you're just on fire and you can't calm it down? Or is it the fact that if you could get so bent out of shape and maintain it, that maybe the discussion will go away? Is it a strategy to get so upset over little things? And, you know, in discussions, very often a wife will say something to a husband, and it's not just wives and husbands, boyfriend, girlfriends, whoever, you know. But in a discussion, you know, you may say something like, I want to talk to you about the fact that you go out and you stay out till 2 o'clock in the morning drinking every night. And I go to bed alone and I don't like it. That's a discussion, right? And I go to bed alone and I have to turn on the heater because I get so lonely. And the husband says, you turn on the heater at night? No wonder our electric bill is so bent out of shape. You know, I told you not to put that heater on. I told you that heater consumes more. And he starts getting upset about the heater. You see, in a way, he could escape the whole thing. Because getting bent out of shape very often tells the partner to go away. But the truth of it is, friends, if your partner does get bent out of shape, it's best to go away. Absolutely. You know, violence always takes two partners. 99.9%, like Ivory Snow. 99.9% of all arguments, of all violence, requires two people. It's one person getting bent, and then it's the other person not seeing that they're bent, but pushing the buttons of the person who is on the edge. And then the buttons get pushed, and then the person comes back. And so when it happens, when violence happens, there's always a sign before it happens. And wherever it's with couples, now with parents and children, of course, it's different. But whenever violence explodes, two people collaborated on it. Because when you see somebody who is getting violent, somebody comes home and they're on the verge or they seem really bent out of shape, don't try to have a discussion about it then. Calm it down, walk out of the situation, get out of the situation somehow, go to sleep, discuss it the next day, call a therapist, call your divorce lawyer, do anything you want, but do not try to discuss it when somebody is on the verge of hysteria. Do whatever you can to calm them down, but if you don't, well, then there's a reason that you don't. And that brings us to the other point about relationships, which is that people very often use the partner's upset as a weapon against them. It is very nice to see, to some people, it is very nice to watch your partner going crazy. Somehow it's like a little sadomasochistic torture. That if you could push the buttons and push the buttons and push the buttons, they're going to get outraged and they're going to scream and they're going to yell and they're going to holler and you're going to be watching it happen. And you're going to be saying to yourself, look how crazy they are. So some people actually push their mates into acting insane. Because they want the person to get bent. It validates them. It makes them feel right. In some way. Or sometimes you just want to have an argument because you're in a sour mood too. And so your partner comes in and maybe you could easily put it to rest, but you don't. You challenge it. You go in, you throw something, you throw a barb at them. They throw a barb back and the two of you are barbing each other, then fighting with each other. It's almost like you need to have this relief of this argument. So let's take another thing. So what I'm saying is it takes two to tango. And it really does take two to tango. And I don't know, a lot of people want to be perceived as the victim, but in all truth, get out of there. If you're in a situation where somebody is becoming violent or explosive, you could somehow find a way to grace yourself out of there. Well, maybe not once. Maybe you get trapped one time. But after that one time, you could see it coming. And you know how to get out of there and get your children out of there, too, if it looks harmful. But there is a way out. And, of course, there are exceptions to this, you know, where the person is a real bully. But in most of the cases, there is a thing that goes on where both people start nudging each other to the point of violence. Now, here's another thing that's a big curiosity to me. And we're going to be taking your calls today and talking about kind of these explosive relationships. Now, let's say you see something about your partner's behavior that's neurotic. By neurotic, I mean you know they're acting in a crazy way. For example, let's say you have a husband, and your husband comes home, and he's very upset from work. And he comes home, and he tells you that his boss just hired a new person to work for him with you. Who's going to be in your office. And with your husband, I mean. It's in your husband's office. And your husband is now, you could tell your husband's jealous of this man. So your husband is really worried about his position with his boss. And he's worried about who's going to get the raise, who's going to get the promotion. And he looks at this other guy, and the other guy is very smooth. And the guy knows how to butter up the boss, and the boss seems to favor him. So there's a situation, and your husband comes home, and he starts telling you, you should see this guy. He's a real sleaze. You should see the color shoes he wears. You should see the kind of ties he wears. He wears the same shirts that my boss wears just to butter up my boss. And he starts complaining about it. And it, not only complaining, he begins to obsess about it. It keeps him up at night. It makes him worried. It gets him depressed. Well, it's all right to be a little jealous. But if you're staying up all night and you're getting worried and you're getting depressed, that's more than jealous. Now you're on the realm of, you know, stuff from the past is coming up. Something about this is not right. It's too much of a reaction for too little of a situation. And the person is saying, I wish he would drop dead. I wish that guy would get hit by a truck. Right? And he's thinking about, I mean, that's the level of it. And you know your husband is gonzo. Gonzo? Gonzo. Flipped his wig. So he picks on, keeps picking on details. What do you do? What do you do as a wife? Do you go over and you whack him in the face a couple of times and say, hey, wake up, you're really jealous? No, and then you realize that your husband has a history, and in his history he had a father, and his father had another son, your brother, your husband's brother, and that his father always favored his brother. So your husband grew up with a father who liked your brother better than he liked him. He liked your husband's brother better than he liked your husband. And your husband had to suffer this. Let's say your husband's brother played baseball and his father really liked him because he was baseball, but you were a nerd and you were more in the intellect and your father didn't like you that much. So let's say this was your husband's sensitivity. So everything in life, when he sees somebody else come in who gets favored by somebody who's an elder, he gets very upset. He's got a sensitivity to being passed over for somebody else, and it's a neurotic sensitivity, and the word neurotic simply means you're behaving in the present as if you were living in the past. That's what the word neurotic means. When a person comes into therapy and they're neurotic, they're behaving in the present as if they were living in the past, as if they were children. You see? So then the husband is there, and now here's your husband acting in a neurotic way, and you know it. And it's validated by the fact that the other day, you and he were in a line to get into a club, and you're waiting on this long line to try to get into this club that you're dying to go to, and some guy walks up to the front of the line and they let him in, and your husband sees it and he gets totally bent out of shape. How could they let that man in line? Don't the rest of you feel angry and so on and so forth and start screaming about it and raising his voice, and everybody else accepts it. It goes with the turf. But, you know, not your husband. He doesn't accept it because he has this thing about his brother. Whenever anybody shows preference to anybody else, he gets whacked. So what do? You love your husband or your wife, whoever it is. And you love him, and you don't want to see him go through this pain. But it's also a nuisance for you to have them go through this all the time. They're complaining about it. They try to engage you. What do you do? Do you go over and say, you know, this is really about your brother when you were a kid? Well, let me make a suggestion to you. Never raid a person's mind. Never tell a person something, an insight about them that they were not ready to hear. If they're hiding it from view, don't give it to them because you're going to become the target. They will just turn all this aggression on you. So you do not tell them, even if you're a skilled therapist, you do not say to them, look, this is really about your brother. It's blah, 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 blah. You don't do that. That's number one. That's out. But number two is, if you sit down and try to talk to them about it in a loving way, every time, every word they say to you about it is in a way validating the condition. If they say to you, and he did this and he did that, and you're listening to it, every time he repeats it, he's kind of setting it deeper in his mind. So what do you do about that? So what's the solution? What is the solution to talking to your partner when your partner clearly has something going on that's not about the current situation, but something going on that's really racking his brain and taking him over? This is an interesting question, don't you think? You think you just give him the advice? It's all about your brother. You think you go, you sit down with him and you tell him, stop being a fool? You think you yell at him? Well, the answer, my friends, is blowing in the wind. The answer is, it's up to the mood you're in. You see, in one mood, let's say you're in the mood to have an argument. And if you're in a negative mood, you could go up against them and you could tell them, stop worrying about that, that's no good, and then they'll turn their anger on you and the two of you will have a big fight. It's really about your motive. If it comes from love, it's a whole different response than if it comes from irritation. So the first thing you've got to do is ask yourself, how do I feel about this? How do I feel about what's going on? How do I feel about my husband right now? How do I feel about my mate? What do I want? That's what you have to ask yourself in private. And then when we come back from our break, I'm going to ask you to answer how you would deal with this situation. And I'd like to hear from you. And I'm going to correct you. I'm going to tell you the downside of it, and I'm going to tell you the upside of it, okay? And we'll see if we can find some kind of a solution, because very often, you know, that's what we are to our partners. We're the witness to their sanity. We're the person who makes them feel like they're on the ground. At its best, a loving relationship makes you feel like you're glad to be alive, no matter how bad the things around you are. This is Armand DeMille. I'm going to take a short break for station identification. And when I came back, I want to play a tribute to the people who are marching right this minute over at the UN, United for Peace and Justice People, Leslie Kagan et al., who are putting their bodies right up there and saying, we protest. I've got something just for all of you, and I'll take a short break. And when I come back, a little music, and then we'll take your calls at 212-209-2900. Right now, we'll be back.
Now is the time for all good men to get together with one another. Iron out their problems and iron out their quarrels and try to live as brothers. And try to find peace within without stepping on one another. And due respect of the women of the world, just remember we all had mothers.
Make this land a better land.
That's Alan Toussaint, T-O-U-S-S-A-I-N-T, with Yes We Can. Yes We Can. From an album called Our New Orleans, or New Orleans. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. In case you just tuned in, we're talking about relationships, and we're talking about people who get ugly in relationships. Yes, they get ugly. They fight with each other. They rip at each other. They are so destructive. Sometimes you think you could say things that are going to go away. There are things I'm sure many of you would like to take back that you've said. You know, you've just said stuff that, you know, went in there as a permanent wound, and you hope they forgot it. You know, but people very often do forget, and sometimes they don't. We were talking about a scenario where you have insight into your mate's behavior, and your mate is bent out of shape about something, and they have, let's say, very jealous, and they're very jealous, and you're turning to them, and you know that this jealousy is based on their early childhood thing, because you've learned enough about psychology to understand there's a sensitivity here. What do you do? What do you do? Go over and explain it? You know, go over and become their therapist? Well, let's take a couple of your calls. I'd like to hear from you. 212-209-2900 is our number here. Just because I'd love to hear from you anyway, because I enjoy talking to the audience here at WBAI as we discuss some of the things that seem to have some meaning. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille.
Hi, Armand. This is Slavik from Brooklyn, New York.
Hello, Slavik.
Hi. Thank you for your show. And, you know, I would agree with you on many issues that you have just discussed. And my comment would be that every one of us has the power of choice. So every one of us can choose to love or can choose to fight. And I think that everyone can choose to have a constructive relationship. And, you know, I have also two questions. Can a human being really give love to the other one? And the next question is, how to express anger that accumulates, for example, during a relationship? How to express the anger in a healthy way without suppressing it?
Yeah, it's a very difficult thing. Do you have that situation in your life, Slavik? Do you have somebody that you've accumulated anger with and you just don't know how to bring it to her attention?
Yeah, you know, sometimes I have discovered in my life that, you know, I was backing up or I was suppressing my anger, not showing it because I didn't want to show it. Or sometimes I choose to show it, but it was not in a constructive way.
Yeah, so it becomes difficult to learn how to do it because these couple of things working against you. One thing is, if you've accumulated if you're somebody who doesn't express anger, keep in mind that the person who chose you as a partner chose you partially because you don't express anger. You see, part of the deal is, if you suppress your anger, your partner chooses you for that reason. And just like your theory at the beginning, you know, you're someone who always makes an intellectual choice. You could either choose the high road or you could choose the low road. And for you, all your life, you've chosen the high road. I'm going to make a choice. I'm not going to become ugly. I'm not going to do this. And so it's a choice. But what happens is, like you see, you know, the anger can accumulate. So now here, let's say you have a partner that you're angry with, but because you've never expressed anger when it comes out, that person is going to be shocked. They're going to be shocked to hear you expressing anger. So one of the considerations you have to make is the fact that your partner chose you because you don't express anger. And this becomes a piece that has to be added into the formula. So I would recommend a book. And I know one of the books is The Guide to Effective Communication. What was his name now? I'm going to get this for you. I'm asking my assistants here. Say it again. Nonviolent Communications. That's what it's called.
Uh-huh.
NVC. You can actually look it up on the internet. And the nonviolent communication people talk about a way of expressing upset and anger that does not trigger violence or a violent response, and they consider a violent response to be anything that's nasty. And this may be have to be your style, because you want your style to come along with the ethic that you've developed over life about choosing a peaceful way. But it is very important. What is it that's been annoying you for so many years?
Maybe, you know, I just don't want to go too deep into my personal problems.
I can understand that. But is it one particular item that's annoyed you over all this time?
You know, sometimes I didn't know what to do with. I had some moments, sometimes when I expressed my anger in a violent way, and I have seen that the other person was shocked, as you said,
yes.
And the person who chose me as a partner didn't expect that.
No, they don't. It is a big shock when you have somebody who's.
That's true, and you know I don't know what to do. Just as I ask the question, what to do, and you know, I think that the book. I've seen the book somewhere. I think it's a good idea to read it.
Marshall Rosenberg, and also, you know, it might be time. You may be changing. See, you may be changing from the guy who's always swallowed his feelings and held him down because you were taking care of somebody else, to somebody who's feeling different about himself. And if you're changing and you're evolving, then it's not only how to express your anger, but how to deal more with your own angry feelings. You know, how you could be more comfortable with them, in a way, rather than just pushing them down. Because if you push them down, you're going to get depressed. You know, that's inevitable. So it may be you that's growing. It may not just be about your relationship. It may be you who's changing. And there again, you run into another problem, because the person who chose you the way you were. They didn't expect you to change. So if you become a person who stands up for himself more, your partner may not like it so much. But then you'll have to hash that out. You know, and see, maybe it's still not a good fit, or maybe it's only a good fit as long as you keep your anger in.
Yeah, Armand, could you comment on that, on the question I asked about love? Can a human being really give love to other human beings? Because, you know, I heard somewhere that it's not possible to give love to other people.
Well, you know, you have to figure out. We have a word we call love, and we call this word love, we use it very funny ways. You know, people say, I love a hamburger, or I love tofu,
yeah.
Or I love popcorn. And then they say, I love my wife, I love my husband. I mean, love is a very funny word. So now, if we're going to say, what is this thing we're talking about, giving love? Is it like you give a sandwich to somebody? How do you give love? Well, if love is, and this is, I'm going to give you a definition that was by In Stranger in a Strange Land by Heinlein. Heinlein wrote this wonderful book about an alien who comes down to the planet. And he asks, for what is a definition of love? And the definition, he said, was, love is the total acceptance of another human being for exactly what they are, with no desire to change them for your own neurotic needs. I'll say it again. Love is the total acceptance of another human being for exactly what they are, with no desire to change them for your own neurotic needs. Now, you may have desire for them to change, and that's okay, but not for your neurotic needs, not because you want to feel safer or something like that, but it is a total acceptance of that other being. Now, if that's the case, and that's the definition of love that we're working with, yes, of course it's possible, because that's the ideal. When you sit with your partner, how do you deal with these problems? First, you got to love them for who they are. And your task is to love them for who they are, to see them with all of their warts, with all of their nicks, with all of the things that are wrong with them, with all their wrinkles. Because if you could see them and love them the way they are, then I guess that's giving love, you know.
Yeah, Armand, but we can also choose not to be dependent on the feelings and on the things we sometimes crave, like like a touch or, you know, some nice words, and that we not that we are not receiving at the specific moment.
I hear you're living in an unbalanced relationship where you feel like you're not getting exactly what you need on the other side. I hear that. And it's
yeah,
time.
Yeah.
I hear, you know. Come talk to me and we'll figure it out for you. Hey, thank you for calling in.
Thank you very much.
Sure. 212-209-2900, my poor heart. See, it starts off with choice. You think it's choice when you choose not to say what bothers you. But very often it's not choice. Sometimes you just can't. Sometimes you're frozen. And I want to go back to what I said a little earlier about people who, once they get into an explosive condition, I wanted to read you, here's one of the surveys that I read recently. I can't find the notation. That when a person becomes engaged and they become argumentative and they become explosive, once they get up there, the reason you can't talk them down is because their heart rate is so high and their chemistry and all of their chemistry is so produced for battle at this point that words do not solve the problem. Tone and presenting a safe atmosphere and just presenting a safe world in which this person can eventually calm down, that may work. But arguing with them or trying to reason with them, that does not work very often. Sometimes it does, but if they're really blowing up, no chance. 212-209-2900. Let's take another call. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, this is Catherine from the Bronx.
Hello, Catherine.
My question is, what if you're trying to avoid the situation from exploding and that's when they really, really want to persist the argument?
Sure. Give me an example of that.
You don't want to keep on talking on the topic because you know it's going to blow over. So you say, let's talk at a later time. And your partner says, no, we're going to talk about it right now.
Of course.
And once
okay.
it turns into an argument, they look at you and say, this is what you like.
Yeah, okay, I got it. So now instead of it being a they, this is a partner you have that you have this argument with frequently?
Yes.
Right? So is it a he or a she?
He.
He says to you, right? He says to you, he's having a discussion with you, and you realize it's boiling.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, this is what Richard Kreidman said, Dr. Kreidman said, when he talked about the destructive versus constructive. The discussion, if it's constructive, does not boil up.
Mm-hmm.
But very often your partner may be just in a destructive mood and he needs to kick somebody and he's in that kind of a mood. So he starts an argument and he won't let you escape the field.
Right.
At a time when he is not arguing, at a time when the two of you are laying in bed, or at a time when the two of you are on vacation, you talk to him about it. You say, look, honey, here's what happens. We get into a situation where you start talking and I realize it's going to get explosive. And maybe it's me or maybe it's you, but I want a right to be able to calm the situation down at the moment. What do you suggest I do? See? So that's one solution to do at a time when he is not in the middle of the argument. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, it makes sense. I've been there. We've gone there, and I think it still repeats itself.
Well, you mean when you go there, you have to wind up with an agreement. Let's say he says, okay, yes, you're right. It's the best idea for you to do at that moment.
Right.
Say you're going to take a bath, and I'll just deal with myself. You know, you make an agreement as to what you're going to do the next time around.
I feel we've gone there, and he tends to forget the agreement and still argue like we've argued in the past.
Okay, then write it down.
Okay.
Then write the agreement down.
Okay.
Say, okay, honey, here it is. Here's my agreement. Would you please say that you agree and I agree at this moment? And don't tell him about all the times he doesn't do it.
Right.
Just say, I want to have this little card that I carry in my wallet that if there's a time to take a pause, I just write the word pause.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in fact, you write the word P-A-W-S.
Mm-hmm.
Don't write the other word. This way it brings a little humor in it.
Mm-hmm.
And you say pause. And your partner says, okay, pause. And he may not like it at the moment. But if he agrees to do it and you have it in writing somewhere, say, look, I'm going to evoke our pause clause, you know?
Okay.
And if he could just get a little humor out of it, if he could just see it, a little pause clause is a wonderful thing. Say, we'll come back and we'll talk about this thing later, but right now I just got to take a breather. Mm-hmm. Now, the other expression, the other thing you could do very often when people are bent out of shape and they're in such a bad mood is you say the following expression. I've said this before on the air. There seems to be something about me that's really bothering you and making you angry. Can you tell me what it is that I am doing so that I could stop it? And it's very specific. There seems to be something I'm doing that's making you very angry. Tell me what it is so I could stop doing it. And very often it'll make them stand back and say, well, Jay, I really can't figure out what it is that you're doing. So it's a good way of stopping people as well. Catherine, I want to thank you for calling in. I like that, the pause clause. Yeah, P-A-W-S, right? Clause, C-L-A-W-S, pause clause. Hey, it's like on a kitten's fingers. 212-209-2900. This is Armando Mill with you with the Positive Mind. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there. Well, I tell you, before I take another call, let me give the answer as to one of the things I think you could do when you have that discussion with somebody and they're getting really, really bent out of something. It's you want to look at it as if this is your child. This clue was given to me. I want you to imagine if it was your son or your daughter who was going through all of this and you love them, not if you were impatient with them, but if you love them, what would you do? You would go over to them. You would stroke them. You would say, oh, honey, I see how much this hurts you. I see how much this bothers you. You wouldn't take away their feeling. You wouldn't discredit it, but you would give them enough affection and caring at the moment that it would make them see in some way they would relent, they would relax. Because a person who gets so upset about nothing has no way to feel safe. They feel like they're in some kind of a war zone, and they have no way out of the war zone. So you got to create safety just as you would with a child. So unfortunately, at that moment, you become a parent to your mate who is the child. And at another time, they'll exchange the role with you, you know, and they'll become the parent to you being the child. And that's not such a bad thing, you know. I mean, as long as it's not all one way all the time, as long as you're not the parent every minute of the time, and they're not, you know, the child all the time, you don't want that because you didn't get married for that. You didn't hook up for that reason. But if it's an exchange, if the parental you can come out and be there for the other person, as if they were sick, you know, as if they got a terrible flu, as if they had a stomach flu, you know, when people get stomach flu, what a disaster it is. And you're their partner and they're running from the bathroom to the sink to the bathroom to the sink. And they're feeling terrible and they're feeling horrible. And there you are loving them and seeing how sick they are. What do? You yell at them? No. You go over and you just kind of stay with them the whole way. What can I do for you? Can I get you some water? Can I help you with this? You don't tell them what to do. You don't give them advice. You just be with them. Be with them. So if you see that your partner is bent in a neurotic way, be there for them without validating or invalidating, without arguing with their position, without yelling them about anything. Just hold their hand while they go through it. And that makes all the difference. Hey, 212-209-2900. Time for one more call. Let's take that last call.
How you doing, Armand?
Hi, who is this?
My name's Roland.
Hello, Roland.
I met in your office a couple of months ago with my fiancé.
Oh, yes, Roland.
Yes, indeed. So we are happily sort of hurtling toward getting married and buying a house.
Uh-huh.
And I'm the one that's the bent-up party in our relationship at the moment. And the long story short is that, you know, throughout my life I've avoided doing the adult things. You know, the grown-up stuff. So here I am, you know, on the threshold of getting married and buying a house, and it's like I'm like fearful to the point of paralysis. us almost. And my fiance is very understanding, and she's much better about this whole thing than I am. But my part is I'm acting out, and I know where it's coming from. It's the fear, and it's like a very ancient fear. It goes way back. It's learned behavior.
Yeah, I understand. And I wish we had more time to talk about it further, because we're just running out of time.
Oh, I understand. Yeah.
But get me on the phone or send me an email, Roland, and we'll talk about it even further.
Sure.
All right? Thank you so much for calling in.
Take care, Armand.
This is Armand DeMille. We're going to have to be going. If you want a copy of today's show, you can get it by going online at thepositivemind.com or at WBAI.org and sampling many of WBAI's wonderful offerings there as well. Again, to all of you people online over there at the UN, my heart. And so you can, if you want to send me an email, it's Armand, A-R-M-A-N-D, at Brainlink, BRAINLINK.com. ¶¶